A Bash in a Box is your go-to destination in the online party goods industry. We specialize in simplifying your party planning experience, offering personalized services for baby showers, birthday parties, anniversary celebrations, gender reveals, holidays, and more. Whether it's a birthday celebration or a holiday extravaganza, we've got you covered. At A Bash in a Box, we understand that hosting a party should be joyful, not overwhelming. That's why we've curated a seamless online platform. Just choose your event type, select a theme from our custom designed collection, pick what box fits your budget, and personalize your party with a few clicks at checkout. Our team of experts will work their magic, and your perfect party decor will be delivered right to your doorstep. Whether it's an intimate gathering or the bash of the year, A Bash in a Box caters to all your party needs. Choose from a variety of custom birthday themes or reach out to us for a personalized design crafted just for you at abashinabox.com.
Welcome to this week's edition of Debriefing the Law. I am Joel Oster.
I am Chris Marone.
And Chris, it is great to be kind of back. I thought we should start with a little bit of a disclaimer. I know last week we talked about how we're doing this fight with Apple Podcasts because we lost the ability to control our podcast. So we had to create a new Apple ID that it's associated with. And in so doing, they told us we can keep all of our subscribers and followers. Turns out that did not happen. We lost all of you. So here's what's going to happen. Because Chris, this happened to you as well. You follow us on our podcast. So tell us what you had to do to get our podcast back on your phone.
Yeah. So rather than going to my normal route, which is going to the library on the app, clicking on Comedian of Law, you know, and listening there, I had to go to the search bar, search Comedian of Law. When I clicked our podcast, I saw that I wasn't following it anymore. So I had to re-click the follow up in the right corner, re-click the automatic downloads for the episodes, and then I was back in the game.
There you go. Because if you only have the March 15th, the last podcast on your your table of contents, your catalog, whatever it is, it's March 15th, the Trial of Jesus Part 1. That means you are logged into the old podcast, which is no longer. Right. The only reason why you're even accessing it is the cache in your phone, but it is gone by the wind. It has been taken down and there's nothing in it. So you have to go search us out, refollow us, and then you can get these great, interesting podcasts, which Chris,
you gotta
get your Trump update. Where else are you gonna get your fair and balanced Trump update than right here?
Oh gosh. Can he just go away?
Please? He's going to be the next president of the United States. He just won't go away. That's not going to happen. Yeah. And as
he's going to be sent away. That's what happens when you go to jail. You get sent away. It's not go away.
Oh man, I hate to say it. This is, and we're going to talk a little bit about this, but this is right in Trump's playbook. This is his, and the Democrats are playing along. They've been happy to play along with this game. If you were to look at Trump's strategy room and peer in, like when they're trying to, hey, what should we do to so that I can become the next president of the United States? I think these four trials fit right into their strategy. And let's just jump right into it because why not? This is the Trump trial. It is now, we are on week two, I believe it is. Chris, I think we also should point out that this is Wednesday. We have to record on Wednesday of this week because I am headed out to a golf tournament and I'm going to be rooming with a guy and he didn't want to participate in the podcast, I guess. I don't know.
Such a lavish life you live, Joel. Just being able to go to CLE cruises and golf tournaments and speaking engagements. Gosh.
It is a lot of fun.
Playboy billionaire Joel.
Oh, man, the life of the CLE instructor is just amazing. Yeah, but I'm actually going to head out to Western Kansas next week, so it's not all fun and games.
It's a destination for sure.
Have you ever been to Western Kansas?
I haven't been to Kansas, Joel.
Seriously?
Seriously.
I don't think I've ever heard a more arrogant statement from anyone in my life. You have yet to venture to the breadbasket of America.
It's called the flyover states for a reason, Joel.
Oh my goodness. Well, hey, we have the best of barbecue, but if you're in Western Kansas, which I know is the only reason why you would even be in Western Kansas, is you're on your way to Colorado Mountains, the Rocky Mountains. But that being said, it stinks. If the wind changes directions, we play tennis tournaments out there, and all of a sudden the wind passes the hog farm on the way to your nostrils, it is not a pleasant smell. But that being said, I'm going out to Western Kansas to do a little bit of sleuthing regarding the clutter murders. I'm fascinated about this. I assume you've heard about the clutter murders. This is goes back to, what, 1959? A farm house in Western Kansas, Holcomb, Kansas, where four family members of the Clutter family were brutally murdered. Have you read that book?
I have not, but now I'm going to have to put it on the top of the list.
Because we're going to cover it in our podcast. So you got to read it.
Absolutely.
It is going to be
an
amazing source. So I'm going there to take some pictures to see what I can. Yes, I know it happened a long, long time ago. So it's probably not much I can get, but I'm hoping to get access to some court files, maybe the scene where the crime took place, take some B-roll video so we can show it in this in the CLEs and also in this podcast. But that being said, it's not all fun and games. Sometimes we actually got to actually get down and do the work and venture out to Western Kansas.
Sounds like you're taking a pilgrimage, like you're walking from your house to Western, pulling a hand cart across Kansas to get to this location.
Dude, it
you're jumping in your car and driving to a golf course. Like, call it what it is.
It is so boring, man. When you get in your car in Kansas City and you're going to drive, let's just say to the Rocky Mountains, Denver, Colorado, you're jumping on I-70, which is just a few miles from my house. You're heading west. You don't even have to steer your car. It's just a straight shot. That's all it is. If your car is aligned properly, it just got to go straight west. Yeah.
Self-driving cars, I-70, patent pending.
Elon Musk, do not test your self-driving cars here. That's not much of a test. It is a straight shot, and there's not much. If you see a gas station, stop over and fill up because you might not get another one. Okay, I'm exaggerating there. Sure. But still.
No, that's a fair assessment.
All right, that's what to look for in the future as we go over these different murder trials. But speaking of trials of the centuries and very important trials, Chris, I'm not sure you can get a bigger trial than what is going on right now in New York City involving the prosecution, the criminal prosecution of not only the former president of the United States, but the current leader in the polls to be the next president of the United States. Chris, sometimes I think when we are in the moment, we lose sight of the historical significance of what is going on. This is huge. I mean, this is history book making. People will be talking about this for hundreds and hundreds of years in America. This has just never happened. Do you think we kind of miss the significance of what's going on here?
I mean, kind of. It depends on which view of history is going to win out, right? Because history is written by the winners. So is it going to be the view of history, like this was some travesty of our justice system and the fall of democracy? Or is it going to be from the view of finally this longstanding criminal mastermind is going to go to jail for what he deserves, and we're going to review him the same way we look at Al Capone or any of the other mob boss? I mean, it really is. How do you look at it? Do you look at it as a political farce? Is that how history is going to remember it? Or is history going to remember it as, we couldn't get him on the actual crimes that he did, so we need to get him on something, so that way we just take him out of circulation?
It's interesting.
It depends on
that, because we actually are going to do a CLE. Our feature CLE of the month next month are the Trump trials. We're going to do a class on the Trump trials and whether or not the ethics of the Trump trial. And Chris, I am hoping this is a fair and balanced CLE. We're going to be presenting the ethical side of, is this a political prosecution? Are political prosecutions ethical? Are they okay? What are the dangers with them? Because I think this trial is ripe with all kinds of dangers. You just alluded to some of them right there, which are people just viewing him so negatively? Can he actually get a fair trial? So, Chris, there's so many different issues I want to jump into, so let's just do it right away. Selection of a jury. They have a jury now. The trial is going on. They found 12 people. But do you really think it was possible to get a fair jury for Donald J. Trump? Chris, who are
I'm not looking for a fair jury. I'm looking for an impartial jury. Fair is where you get cotton candy. Like, fair is a horrible, and And I know I'm nitpicking on this word, but so many people are like, oh, that's unfair, or this is nothing is guaranteed to be fair in our justice system. We've never said we have a fair system. We have an impartial system.
What do you mean by impartial? And is it possible to get an impartial jury here?
No, I don't think it's possible to get an impartial jury anywhere in this day and age because of social media, because of the news entertainment industry, because of our echo chambers that we live in now. I think we are so bombarded by our chosen entertainment source that we consider news that being impartial or having a neutral opinion about anything doesn't exist anymore.
So that is the goal. You need to have an impartial jury. In other words, what do I mean by that? A jury that will look at this case and decide this case based upon the facts and evidence and law before the jury and before the court, not based upon preconceived ideas and notions of who you think Donald J. Trump is, not based upon what some media reported that he did, because we know the media has their own slants and angles. Right. Do we need to go back over, the whole Robert Mueller investigation of the Russia, hoax? I mean, the media has been wrong. Politicians often are wrong. In fact, I would say politicians are more wrong than they are right. So you are in trial. You want the jurors that are sat to make a decision based upon what's presented in the court, not based upon their ulterior motives. And Chris, I have a lot of concerns as to whether or not that is possible in this situation. Let's start off with this. This might be a little bit more fun and joke, but still, who could possibly be Trump's peers? Who could be his peers? Kim Jong-un? I mean, Putin? Who has such a huge, massive ego that possibly you would consider that one of Trump's peers? And I know you don't really have a jury of your peers, but still, it's a nice thought.
I mean, these are all issues on appeal that have been fought for many, 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 many years. You look back at the evolution of the jury trial system, at least over the 1900s. Let's make it modern, right? We can even say from 1920 to 2020, if you look at that 100 years of the evolution of the trial system, when you were, in the South in the 1960s, if you were a black man being accused of a crime, the courts found a jury of your peers were white, upper middle class, upper class males.
Right. And that was wrong. And the Supreme Court has said you can't do that anymore.
Right. So, but now I was in a jury duty a couple months ago. And the case was a Latino defendant charged with, I wanted to say, it was either armed robbery of a vehicle or just grand theft auto. I can't remember I didn't get picked for the jury. They, for some reason, they don't want the criminal defense lawyer to be on the criminal jury. That's, solid prosecution 101 right there. But I mean, I think that there was maybe 10 or 12 of the 200 people that were there that were Latino males.
All right.
You're not going to get 12 juries of your peers.
No.
Only 10 are in the jury pool, but then we stretch it out, right? Peers are now anyone in society that is 18 to 65 that could sit on a jury. That's what we've now narrowed down the peer pool to, and then you get to have the lawyers come in and have their challenges and whatnot. Funny enough, Arizona did away with peremptory challenges. Okay. So now all your challenge, you have to challenge for cause and you only get 12.
And I assume that probably came about because lawyers were using it discreetly or maybe not so discreetly to engage in some racial prejudice.
Discriminatory
strikes to strike people that were the wrong race for that particular case, according to that lawyer. So you got rid of those because that is the objective. You want a fair, imbalanced, impartial jury, not imbalanced, impartial jury. Mm-hmm. And
you want an imbalanced jury. I want a jury that is balanced, tipped in my direction. I don't want a balanced. No. I want a whole sympathetic jury that believes the system is set up against my defendant. And that's who I want.
And I am not sure if the objective is a fair and impartial jury that it is even possible in this Trump case. And here's why, another reason why I'm saying that. It dawned on me. If you have a financial interest in a case, usually that disqualifies mm-hmm. you. In fact, throughout all of the ethical codes regarding almost any profession out there, if you have a financial stake, usually that's a disqualifying element to you being fair in that matter. For example, let's just say you are a doctor and a drug rep comes to you and offers you, hey, here's a lot of free, drugs for you to give your patients. And oh, by the way, here's some free trips for you as well to Cancun and to wherever. No, doctors shouldn't take those free trips from pharmaceutical reps because it might influence how they, encourage patients to take these drugs. And so financial incentives.
Judges' wives shouldn't take jobs with companies that are arguing at the judges' court?
I am just saying that generally financial interest is a general rule, plays a huge role in whether or not you can be fair and impartial. So in this particular case, every single one of these 12 jurors are sitting on $1 million-plus book deal.
Well, yeah.
But do you think that's not going to impact the people wanting to sit? They know they just won the lottery. If they're going to say whatever they have to say to get on that lottery, because that is $1 million-plus lottery ticket. Not lottery ticket. Okay. Lottery ticket, winning lottery ticket.
Right. So then to that end, what's the solution? No jury trial?
No, I'm just pointing out that there's problems with this.
But that's everyone. That's whether you love Donald Trump or you hate Donald Trump, you're going to write a book as a juror. No. And again, what angle are you going to write it from? The I love Donald Trump book? Or I hate Donald Trump perspective, but everybody on that trial is going to write a book. So if that's the standard by which you're trying to find an impartial jury, you're not going to find it because, everybody and their brother wants to be on the Trump jury trial.
I agree with you. I am just pointing out the obvious that do they actually have 12 fair and impartial jurors when you realize that everyone has $1 million-plus incentive to maybe conceal some things during voir dire to make sure things don't come out. Maybe their true feelings don't come out when the outcome is $1 million-plus. Chris, in any other industry, we would say, no, that's not going to work. You are obviously biased. But in this system, it's baked into the cake.
Well, because there's no way around it.
Right. I agree.
Right.
That we can think of right now, even though we're two smart people.
So then that makes the jury my least favorite word, fair.
Right.
It makes the jury fair because love them or hate them, you're going to write a book after this.
Yes.
Okay, so if everybody's going to write a book after this, we know that already. Okay, so that way it's not like, you're only going to write a book if Trump is found guilty. You're going to write a book no matter what. And so you're right, it's baked into the cake. So that's going to make the jury fair based on the fact that everyone has the same interest, which isn't justice, sadly enough, but is self-interest of, hey.
I just think you have to recognize
New York,
that.
If you're looking for an alternate juror, I'm available.
You have to recognize that is an incentive for every single person to sit on that jury. That is now $1 million winning lottery ticket that they just got possession of.
I mean, I would say same for the Murdoch trial, same for the Lori Daybell, Chad Daybell murder trial.
I agree with all that. I think this one takes all of those, times it by 10, because you're talking about the leading Donald person Trump to be the next president of the United States. And maybe you control that outcome in your hands. I mean, come on. That is an immense amount of power.
I mean, even there, in my opinion, he's the leading candidate to be the next, president of the Prison Homeowners Association in cell block 4. And
let's talk about let's actually go now to the trial. They had opening statements in opening statements last week or on Monday of this week. And by the way, we are recording this podcast on a Wednesday because I have to go to the golf, so we don't really know what's happening after Wednesday, but we'll cover that next week. Don't worry about it.
We'll follow up.
The opening statements for both sides. Now, first of all, let me just talk a little bit about the opening statements in the trial. Have you seen video of the court? No one's there.
Yeah. That's what. Yeah. I am surprised on how empty it is.
They won't let people in there. So and I get why, because everyone wants to be in there. I mean, it would be the most sought out ticket since OJ, maybe even higher than OJ. I'm not sure. We know very little bit about what's actually going on in court, but the reporters are reporting on it. The prosecution
cameras are live. I'm watching the Trump trial.
Right. So we get that aspect of it. So the prosecution is pursuing a criminal conspiracy. They said that the opening in their opening statement that Trump was behind a criminal conspiracy. Chris, I think the prosecution has a real tough case to make here. They led off. So Abraham Lincoln, good old Honest Abe, said, plead not what you need not, lest you're obliged to prove what you cannot. Wise words from Honest Abe. I think the prosecution bit off way too much in their opening statements by alleging a criminal conspiracy. They're trying to create some kind of Al Capone-ish mafia organization. It's a criminal conspiracy. Well, now you're going to have to actually prove that. And I don't think in this case the facts come anywhere close to proving any criminal activity, because I can't even find a single crime committed here, let alone a criminal conspiracy. I think the prosecution bit off way more than they can chew, and they pled what they should not, and now they will have to prove what they cannot.
I don't think anyone going into this trial has a neutral or impartial opinion. I think that you have my side of the aisle that knows that he's guilty and knows that he's garbage and knows that he goes and belongs in jail. And you have your side of the aisle that thinks that this is a farce trial. And I don't think either of us are going to be convinced otherwise by any sort of action that this prosecution or defense puts on. I don't think that there's going to be even the basic clear and convincing evidence any direction that's going to change any of our opinions when it comes to Donald Trump.
Which is interesting, because this is a trial over whether or not he violated the record keeping laws there of New York and committed another crime in furtherance falsifying his documents. That's the actual crime, not your general opinion of Donald Trump. That can't be what this trial is about. And that's going to be the problem for the prosecution.
But you and I are both smart lawyers. Pat ourselves on the back. And I could say, reading the statute, I don't know how I would prosecute anyone under the statute. Like, not just John, like, take the emotional, manipulative narcissist Donald Trump out of it. I don't know how you could go about prosecuting anyone under that statute, period. I've read it a bunch of times. I'm trying to understand the elements of it, trying to prove this type of action under New York law. I'm not a prosecutor, so I can't wrap my head around it. I'm sure there are many prosecutors that could come on and talk about how they would, present this case and move it forward. But like anything else, we know about 12% of what actually is, we could read the filings and watch what's going on, but we're not in strategy sessions. So I think it's hard in general to get a guilty conviction on these statutes alone. Again, taking out Donald Trump completely, the statute is one to be difficult to prosecute under. So now, adding in Donald Trump, you're adding in a whole new world of opinions and options and desires and media circuses and all that jazz.
But this has to be a trial over this law and these facts. And that is where I'm struggling. I think the prosecution really struggled. There is no crime. They throw out the word criminal conspiracy. They can't prove it. There is no crime here. So the first day of trial, and by the way, if you need any proof that this case is low-hanging fruit for late-night comedians, look no further than the very first witness called. So this is a case about whether or not Donald Trump illegally made some hush money payments to a porn star, and the prosecution's first witness, David Pecker. Chris, what are you going to do with that? What are you going to
everything.
Do with that?
Everything. everything.
Saturday everything. Live is having a field day with this one.
I honestly think that, in all due respect, it's a mischaracterization of the case is about whether or not, not that he paid hush money to a porn star or not, that I don't think that's the fact in debate, is whether or not the money paid was recorded correct. And this is where I think the problem with the statute is. Was the money paid recorded correctly for business records purposes?
No. Was the record keeping, you're right, but that record keeping had to have been done to conceal a felony, another crime. Right. What was the other crime that these records were improperly recorded? And that's where they don't have this other crime. There is no crime. And we'll get on to the whole record keeping problem. The record keeping problem is a whole nother issue. But you got those two elements. You got a business record that was kept in a way to conceal another crime. There was no other crime.
Well, and that's, again, that's why it's hard to prove under the statute. What are we looking at here? Is the crime, is the other crime prostitution? Is the underlying crime, I mean,
they're going to say the other crime was to improperly influence a federal election. There's a problem with that. The record keeping was done post election. They were done in 2017. So even even taking their improperly influencing election, giving them credence for that, which I do not, because of a huge reason I'll get to in a minute. It was done after the election. So it was not done in furtherance of the election of 2016. And no one's buying that was done for the 2020 election. Now you're even going to lose ardent jurors on that. Okay, so why do I mean that that's not even a crime? Here's what I mean. When you're dealing with campaign expenses, all right, there's a couple of different rules here. You got contribution rules, how much you can contribute to a candidate, and you have expenditure rules, how much you can spend on an election matter if it's not a contribution, and then you have reporting requirements. All of these are relevant here. Okay, when we're dealing with contributions and expenditures, they do not apply to you spending your own money. And even the FEC admitted that they did not pursue any charges here because Donald Trump was spending his own money. Okay, so then you go to, well, what about disclosures? Well, the disclosures would have all been done after the election. And so that's what I'm saying. There's no crime here. He can spend his own money in furtherance of the election. And any way that these records were kept after the fact was not done to influence the election, because that would have been done after the election took place.
Yeah.
I think so, the prosecution is a rough, very tough row here.
So according to, and I'm literally just looking it up as we're sitting here. According to the court records, the payment was made October of 2016.
Right. There's three payments here. That was one of the payments. Right.
Right. Right. So if it was made in October of 2016, that was pre-election.
Yes, right before the election.
Right before the election. And I'm just trying to make the argument, Joel. I'm not trying I'm trying to make the argument. I'm trying to think about being a prosecutor and making the argument. That could be the October 2016 payment, could be argued, right? Good or bad, could be argued that that was in furtherance of the election and therefore should have been reported as a campaign contribution.
Right, but Donald Trump spent his own money.
Even when you spend your own money in furtherance of your election, you still have to disclose it.
That's true, but you can spend it. It's not a contribution.
It's an in-kind contribution. And so
here's what I'm saying. You can spend all your own money in furtherance of an election. Right, that is not a problem.
But you still have to report it as an in-kind contribution.
Let's say that is true. That would have been done after the election. That was not done to influence the election. That's the problem we're going to have.
But it was done to influence the election. This is the argument. It was done to influence the election. Yeah. If he would have reported it on his disclosures, on his November 15th disclosures that he paid Stormy Daniels a relaxation consultant fee, then there wouldn't have been a problem. But he didn't report it on his contribution, his November post-election contribution sheets.
So that's
the problem.
Right.
That could present a problem.
I do agree with you that that is what the prosecution is trying to say. But again, you can spend your own money. It's not an illegal contribution. And to back me up on that, here's my slam dunk proof that backs me up on this. The DOJ, the Federal Election Commission as well, none of them pursued a campaign violation against Donald Trump. You better believe it. They had even a slight argument that Donald Trump violated the campaign finance rules. They would have gone after him, no doubt about it. And they did not do it because he spent his own money. It's not a campaign violation.
Joel, you're focusing on the wrong thing. You're really trying to hammer home this idea that just because he spent his own money, he doesn't have to report it. He still has to. We're not arguing whether or not he spent his own money. Spend your own money all you want. You still have to report that you spent the money. That's the not spending the money. The money being spent is not the issue. The issue is, did you report that you spent your own money in furtherance of your campaign?
So that is such a minor infraction. In fact, it's so far down the totem pole of violations. And here's why.
Still a
There's
crime.
Another. No. There's another reason why he spent that money. There's another reason. And so even the Federal Election Commission and the DOJ said, there's nothing here. This is a nothing burger. We won't even bring any kind of a charge against Donald Trump, not even an informal slap on your wrist, fine.
That doesn't mean anything.
That means everything about how weak this case is.
Just because the DOJ is not going to prosecute. The DOJ doesn't prosecute hundreds of thousands of cases all the time. The DOJ doesn't prosecute.
If they thought Donald Trump violated the election rules, they would have brought some kind of fine.
Not at all. The DOJ is not going to get into some political, like, slap boxing match. They have more important things to do, more important cases to try, more important things to be about.
Nothing is more important than taking down a president. They would have gone after him if they had anything.
Why would they have gone after a sitting president?
They want to.
No, the sitting president appointed the head of the DOJ. So they're not going to go after the sitting president. Are they going to go after him now? No, the statute of limitations has ran. There is no, like, the fact that the DOJ didn't prosecute is akin to saying nothing, because it doesn't matter that the DOJ or the FEC didn't prosecute. They don't do this all the time. They have prosecutional, ability to turn down or turn up cases. So the fact that they didn't prosecute doesn't mean anything.
Okay,
just means they didn't prosecute.
So, but they had no problem going after
Hillary Clinton,
Trump, the Russia thing that did not even exist. But you're saying they could not have found a way to pursue any kind of campaign violation against him.
They didn't want to waste resources to do so. Not that they couldn't do it. It's an allocation of resources.
Well, you make a good point. I do think at the end of the day, that showcases how weak this case is. There is no other crime out there that they're looking at. Maybe you've identified some kind of minute small, you forgot to disclose the spending of your own money after the fact. I don't think any jury is going to say, no, that's not a felony here. That's not a cover up here. He's allowed to spend his own money. As far as the whether it was reported, that it wasn't done in furtherance of the election. That was after the fact.
Yeah, but that's a weird argument to make, because if you're required to disclose and you don't disclose even after the election's over, you're still in violation of the act. So under that logic, right? Under that logic, politicians everywhere can just take as much campaign finance monies as they want. They could spend as much money out of their own pocket as they want, and they don't need to report anything because, well, the election's over, so it doesn't matter.
Now, I get
that ruins the integrity of the system. Like, that's the point, is in the final stretch, who gave you all your money? How did you spend your money? That informs me for further elections down the road.
And I get you on that one as far as the reporting after the fact. But the problem here is the prosecution is setting up their case. And in their opening statement, they're talking about a criminal conspiracy to influence the 2016 election. And that's where I think they pled too much, because they're not going to be able to prove it in closing arguments, because this was done after the election. and that I think their case is going to fall like a house of cards.
Well, you get all you have to do is get Stormy on there to say, "Hey, I was going to tell the world that I had, you know, sexual relations with Donald Trump before the election, and turns out he's got a X-sized this and a he only lasts this long, and he's not really a man. I've been with much bigger and better men, and you know, and he paid me to keep that quiet so that way people didn't think he wasn't as masculine." I don't know.
That will just help. Unfortunately, that will just help his poll numbers soar through the roof.
Absolutely. People love to hear about his sex life.
I don't understand
for
why.
For some ungodly reason.
The more negative stuff that comes out, the higher he goes up in the polls. That's why I said earlier, I do believe this is right in his campaign strategy book.
Absolutely.
Right now, this is also in the Democrats' strategy book. They both think that it serves their interests, and so that's why we get this trial. All right, but as to the merits of the trial, I do think they're going to have a problem proving some kind of crime here. The second main problem I have with the prosecution's case is this. It's going to all hinge on, did you record these in such a way that covered up some other crime? Well, the problem here is Donald Trump is not the person in charge of how it got recorded. If he wanted to tell Michael Cohen, and I believe that so far that's what he told. He did. He told Michael Cohen, record this as a legal expense. Okay, there is a way Michael Cohen could have done that. He is a lawyer. He could have signed a retainer for this point. He could have accepted that money and put it into a trust account and paid money out from the trust account. I mean, there are ways he could have done this to make this a lawyer expense. If Michael Cohen did not do that, why is that on Donald Trump? And by the way, this is not the first.
That's the strongest argument right there.
And Chris, this is not.
I'll concede that.
This is not the first time I have said this. And believe it or not, I listened to their opening statement, and that exactly was what the defense's theory was. I think the defense is listening to our podcast and coming up with their strategy, because their strategy and the defense's strategy during the opening argument was, hey, these are NDAs. These are perfectly legal. They go on all of the time. Yes, you call them hush money payments. They're also called non-disclosure agreements. They go on all the time. For lawyers, write them every day. Secondly, if there was a mess up in how it was recorded, that's on Michael Cohen, not on Donald Trump. He's not the one in charge of actually doing the fine details on recording these entries. So I think that is going to that is the defense's case. And we have the first witness that was called. Now, Chris, before the first witness was called, there was a hearing regarding the gag order. I don't know if you follow this. When I dug into this gag order, I was laughing. I mean, I thought this is definitely Donald Trump's campaign strategy right here. Do you know what the maximum fine for each alleged violation of the gag order was?
$11.
It was $1,000. $1,000 per violation, which was 10 alleged violations of the gag order. Chris, quickly do that math. That's $10,000 Donald Trump might have to pay for the violations of the gag order.
Too easy.
Chris, that is easy money right there. That is great ROI on his marketing expenses. So he could not buy better marketing than all in CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, whatever, you know, his even Truth Social, his own marketing. When he is reporting on what he's saying, that Michael Cohen is a liar, whatever he's saying, if he gets dinged $10,000, that's money well spent.
Yeah. I mean, that's because he's getting hundreds of millions of dollars of free press.
He is.
So his media budget now is just paying the gag order every time. If they really wanted to put teeth on the gag order, they would put prison time with it.
The next one might be, the judge could say, hey, next violation might ratchet it up to prison time. We haven't gotten there yet. Maybe the judge's order will come out and say that the next violation will result. But until that prison threat is put on there for repeated violations, it's not on the table. $1,000 a pop, that is great ROI on his marketing budget. Let me go over some of the statements that he said that were part of the gag order, because I have a problem with these statements. One of the statements was, Michael Cohen is a convicted liar and he's got no credibility whatsoever. I read that in a CNN article lambasting Trump for violating. So this was apparently the most egregious violation of the gag order. Chris, okay. I have no problem with that statement. He's allowed to say Michael Cohen is a liar. What's wrong with that?
Well, one, you're not the center focal point of the story, so you not having a problem with it really, like me having a problem with it, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
What matters is what the judge has said you can or cannot discuss during the case. Michael Cohen, it's a true statement. It's not saying that he's lying or slandering Michael Cohen. The judge has said you are not to talk about this trial or any of the witnesses during the trial.
Which I have a problem with that.
Too bad, Joel.
No, listen. Right, get this. This is clearly a political prosecution. No doubt about it. The timing of this was meant to impede Donald Trump's campaign. I think that's unquestioned. The timing of this was to impact, even bringing this was to persecute the political enemy here. So realizing that this was done in the middle of a presidential campaign, not by accident, to say, Donald Trump, you can't respond to this.
He can respond in court.
No. That's, he has to be able to respond outside of court. This is a campaign for the presidency.
Doesn't. No, it's not. It is a trial. And he is trying to turn this trial into a campaign for the presidency. He is using the court system as his media block. And the judge is trying to maintain some little insignificant amount of control over his courtroom from a narcissistic criminal. And the fact of the matter is that Donald Trump has to abide by all the rules that the rest of us have to. If he doesn't like his trial, appeal it like the rest of us. We don't get to have the argument in court whether or not the gag order is right or not. We have to take that to the appellate court. And if Donald Trump wants to take it to the appellate court, do it. But you don't get to come out and be like, oh, and this guy's an idiot, and this guy's a liar, and I'm a victim. Go F yourself, dude. You have to follow the rules just like the rest of us. Suck it up.
I agree with you on 90% of that. But what I disagree, in other words, I think in normal trials, you need a gag order. You need to protect witnesses. You need to protect the sanctity of the
trial. And this
is
a normal trial.
This is as far from a normal trial as you can get. You are talking about a prosecution that was designed to impede his presidency, his candidacy for the president.
Take it to the appellate court then. Take it to the appellate court. You don't get to do it in the court of public opinion. We are a civilized society, Joel. You don't get to do it in the court of public opinion. This is why we don't put fathers of rape victims on juries. We wait and we use it in the courts, and he takes it to the appellate court. Use the system that he's benefited from.
I agree with this 90% of the time. You definitely need to rein in statements that are made. But here, I don't think that is proper for two reasons. One, this is a political prosecution, and so he should be able to respond in kind during his candidacy. Secondly, this is Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen is doing his own book deal tour right now over what his statements are going to be. He is not going to be influenced whatsoever by what Donald Trump says about him. This is not some kind of non-public figure who might be called as a witness that the court is afraid of Donald Trump outing, and there might be some intimidation going that direction. This is Michael Cohen. He is not going to be intimidated in the slightest. It's actually going to help his book sales.
But Joel, we literally started out this podcast talking about an impartial jury,
right. Trying
to create an impartial jury. You're right. Michael Cohen isn't going to benefit from this. The gag order isn't for Michael Cohen. The gag order is to preserve an impartial jury. And by allowing Donald Trump to just run his mouth and violate the gag order left, right, and center is tainting the jury pool. So that way, on appeal, he can go, see, the jury pool was tainted against me. They hate me for everything that I say. See, I had this gag order and I violated it all the time. And the jury all of a sudden didn't like the fact that I violated the gag order. So I'm going to jail now. This is like his sociopathic behavior is also the rules don't apply to me. I don't have to do the rules. I'm Donald Trump, blah, 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 blah. Whether it's a political prosecution or not, that will be, again, determined at the appellate level.
The problem with that, and you know this, since you have been involved in politics, they strategically did this case at a certain time so the appellate level would come. The appellate review would come after the election.
Welcome to the club.
They can't get away with that kind of...
The same way he engineered payments to come after the election.
Now you get that, that's what I'm saying. This is a political move.
It's good for the gander.
No, this is...
The judge's ordered a gag order. whether we like it or not, the judge is given a gag order. If you don't like it, appeal it. If you don't have, and you can stop a trial to appeal an order of a judge. This
not,
doesn't
not
wait
that
till
kind
the
of
end.
Issue.
You totally can. You absolutely can do. You could do an emergency order to the appellate court to make sure that that gag order doesn't violate his First Amendment rights.
And he should do that and go all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. Because I think that's a
won't.
Real solid. No, I think he would if he actually.
No,
if
he wouldn't because he likes he likes the gag order. He likes the gag. Again, it creates controversy. He's going to pay the $10,000. He's not going to appeal the gag order because now he has something to yell about in his Truth Social ramblings.
That I do agree with. I do think that he likes the gag order because he gets media attention out of this. I think every time he talks about how Michael Cohen is the other side star witness, that makes his case. I think I've proved my point. This trial is going to capture. It's a fascinating trial on so many different levels. Can you get a fair trial? I am not certain that we have not proven that he cannot get a fair trial through this discourse because it's as we understand the trial system, I'm not sure it's even possible for him to get a fair trial in this case, but I don't know. Again, as you said, fairs are where they serve cotton candy and turkey legs. I'm not so bothered by that. But again, that was this week. They say this trial might last 6 weeks. And so there's more to come and cover as they bring out the different witnesses. All right. Hey, it is now time for our courtroom quarterback segment. All right, so we don't have much to talk about here because I know this is the part where it's just you and I talking. But since it is you and I talking, you sent me a meme this week that I thought was really fascinating because the NFL draft is coming up and all these teams are excited. This is the time when they improve their team and they get their future franchise quarterback. They're all going to draft Patrick Mahomes. I can remember the day that Patrick Mahomes was drafted. And Chris, I was very disappointed in the Chiefs. I heard they had traded up to pick a quarterback, and I thought, sweet, we got Deshaun Watson. They did not pick Deshaun Watson. They picked Texas Tech's quarterback, Patrick Mahomes. I am a big Big 12 follower. I have several teams. I've been a lifelong fan of the Big 12. Used to be the Big 8. And I was bummed. You don't get a Texas Tech quarterback. Well, obviously, I was wrong. That
being
said,
repentance is a very real thing.
There are a lot of quarterbacks that could be drafted in this year's draft, and that's all the excitement. Your team's going to be remade with drafting an amazing quarterback. All that to say, you sent me a meme this week that kind of sheds light on. Well, hold off on that excitement. This is the 2021 NFL draft. I believe these were all first-round draft picks. Maybe one some other.
Nope.
They're all first-round picks.
All first-round picks.
All right. I'm looking at this meme here, and you're going to help me out with names, but the top left here is the golden locks, golden arm from Clemson, Trevor Lawrence. He was picked number one in that draft. I believe picked number two in that draft there was Zach Wilson. And then below that, you got Trey Lance. Was he picked third in that draft?
Yeah, the Niners did the worst thing ever. And I talk about disappointed, right? As a Niners fan.
Yeah, they traded
Watching them, well, not just trade up, but we traded, I want to say, 3 second-round draft picks and 2 first-round draft picks to get up to Trey Lance. Come on.
Wow. And then fourth on this one is Justin Fields. I don't know what number he was picked, but first round.
First round. I don't remember. I think these guys were all in like the top 20 picks or something like
Mac
that.
Mac Jones was drafted by the New England Patriots, and I know he was picked 15th or 14th, if I remembered.
Yep.
And I don't recognize this sixth person. You researched. Who is this sixth person on this
team? Kyle Trask.
I don't even remember him, but he was a first-round pick.
He was a first-round pick, and he was going to be behind Brady in Tampa Bay, and the hope was, right, you're going to be mentored by Brady.
There you go.
And now you're sitting third chair behind Baker Mayfield, a walk-on from North Carolina State, who I don't even know the name, and then you got Kyle Trask.
There you go. So of these six quarterbacks, let's see how they have done. On the top left, you have Trevor Lawrence. He is still doing well. I guess you could say that was a good pick.
Yeah.
I think he's a bust because I'm looking at him as being a generational quarterback. So if you're going to use him to that, hold him to that standard as a generational quarterback, I think he is a bust. But obviously, he's a great quarterback. He's going to be starting in this league for probably another 10 to 15 years. All right. So that one worked out. Zach Wilson. Traded this last couple weeks to the Denver Broncos.
I wonder if they're going to keep him at the number three so that way Denver doesn't have to recycle fan jerseys.
Probably. That's actually a really good idea. Not that anyone bought those jerseys, but yeah, might as well since no one bought them.
You don't have to put a new – there you go. They're not going to be collector's items anymore.
As a Chiefs fan, I was excited that the Broncos traded for Zach Wilson. Then you have Trey Lance traded.
Yep.
To the Dallas Cowboys. Then you have Justin Fields traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mac Jones. To start
behind Russell Wilson, right? You're going to put Mac Jones behind Russell Wilson?
If I were Justin Fields, I would say that is a great trade. I think he can overtake Russell Wilson within a season.
Easily.
Mac Jones. Who was he traded to? I forget. Someone.
Colts?
Someone
was it the Colts?
No one wants him.
Yeah, we have Google. We can pop into Google real quick.
And then the last guy is still there in Tampa. Like you said, he's a third string quarterback. My point here is of those six, all six of those teams, after that first day of the draft, said, yes, we got our quarterback of the future. The future is so bright. It did not pan out for all those teams.
Mac Jones got traded to the Jacksonville Jaguars behind Trevor Lawrence.
That's probably a good place for him. He is a future career backup.
Don't
get excited when your team drafts a backup quarterback with his first pick of the draft. So this year, when everyone gets excited, just hold on to your horses because it probably is not going to play out like you think. This is not the 1983 draft class. Or even the Mahomes 2017 was also a really good draft class. Minus the number two pick. So all those, these quarterbacks didn't even make it through their rookie contract except for one before they were traded. So again, hold your excitement, just temper it just a bit.
I also got to think, Trey Lance came out of North Dakota State?
Yes.
Alabama for Mac Jones, Ohio State for Justin Fields, BYU for Zach Wilson, Clemson. I don't even know where Kyle Trask went. I know nothing about the guy.
I don't
know. But, that 2021 draft class was coming off of the 2020 COVID college season where you didn't really get a look at these guys. You didn't really get to see how they fared it out. So having a trash draft class tells me that, college football really prepares you for the big leagues.
I really think it does. You have to stay in college for 3 years and play against good competition. Yeah. It is interesting that of the Super Bowl quarterbacks the last couple of years, majority of them have come from what conference? The Big 12.
Big 12.
Exactly. So to take that SEC and Big 10, put that in your pipe and smoke it. All right.
That's right. Nick Saban, your retiree. Right.
Hey, it is time to go here. I got a golf tournament to go play in. I know you got some cough medicine to down.
And while
you are recovering from your sickness, turn on the trial. Follow the Trump trials. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more to cover in the next few weeks. So have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time.
See you, Joel.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. We need your love to help us continue highlighting the funnier side of the law. I want to give a special shout out to our Vice President of Operations, Wendy Oster, without whom this entire operation would be a complete and utter mess. Sean Wynn and 15.5 Features for making me sound way better than I actually do. Brooke Boland for our marketing efforts, and Ryan Kuhn and Paul Kuhn of Triplicity Marketing for our technical and computer support.